Before I begin my story, I want to tell you how this novel came to be. It all started because I discovered that I have two real detectives among my readers. I don't know how they do it, but they always find copies of my novels when someone tries to publish them as their own. One lives in Canada and the other in the Dominican Republic, and thanks to them I have been able to report several of those copies. For some people, copying a novel may only take 15 minutes, but for those of us who write a story, it represents many hours of work, sleepless nights, research, and putting a little piece of our hearts into each sentence. That's why it hurts so much when someone tries to appropriate someone else's effort. That's how this story came to be. I wanted to thank my two detectives with all my heart by writing a novel in which they could also become protagonists. That's why Marcia and Emma exist. They are a small tribute to two wonderful people who, without asking me for anything in return, decided to take care of my stories. But this dedication is also for all the Marcias and Emmas who, in one way or another, support creators, defend their work, and remind them that it is worth continuing, that it is worth continuing. I hope this story makes you laugh, dream, travel to another era, and why not, also get a little excited. Because you are the ones who encourage me to keep writing, to not give up, and to keep fighting for this little corner that we have all built over time. And for those who still don't know me, my name is Carmen Losada and I am the creator of the channel Romances de Otro Siglo. Now come with me to discover the investigations of Marcia and Emma Ashcroft. Because I confess something, I had a lot of fun writing this novel. I hope you also have fun listening to it.
London is full of great detectives, brilliant. Brilliant men capable of solving impossible robberies, pursuing dangerous criminals, and discovering the city's best-kept secrets. But this is not the story of one of them. This is the story of two cousins who worked as secretaries at a police station and who should never have gotten involved in an investigation. Marcia and Emma Ashcroft only organized files, took statements, and made sure that the work of the station ran like clockwork. At least that was the theory, because the reality was very different. Every time an injustice came to light, Marcia ended up asking too many questions. And every time Marcia asked too many questions, Emma ended up following her. What neither of them imagined was that a case as absurd as the theft of a few simple balls of wool would end up connecting with a dangerous gang of thieves testing the patience. Testing the patience of two detectives who would have preferred to keep them as far away from any investigation as possible. Between eccentric neighbors, clues that no one else seemed to see, arguments that were as funny as they were inevitable, and a mystery that grew with each page, they will discover that sometimes the most important cases begin with the details that everyone else chooses to ignore. After all, who could have imagined that the most ridiculous case in London would change all of their lives? Chapter 1. London's Most Ridiculous Case. The London police station looked like a real battlefield Isolde. Uniformed officers came and went through the corridors carrying folders, statements, and evidence, while several citizens waited patiently for their turn to file complaints that would surely take hours to be dealt with. Since early in the morning, nobody had been able to find a single moment of peace. The theft of some valuable jewels kept a good part of the detectives busy. The arson attack still lacked any clear suspect, and as if that were not already enough, an attempted murder that had occurred just the night before had turned the station into a place where everyone walked quickly and no one seemed to have gotten enough sleep. Detectives Arthur Blackwater and Oliver Penrooke were the best example of this. They had been working almost non-stop for several days, and fatigue was beginning to show even on their faces. Arthur reviewed a statement with a serious expression, while Oliver reviewed a mountain of reports that seemed to have no end. Neither of them had touched the tea that rested on their desks, already completely cold. Amidst the chaos, the front door opened again. An elderly woman in her 70s entered, holding a small wicker basket in both hands. Inside, she carried knitting needles, several balls of wool in different colors, and a handbag as old as herself. She walked somewhat timidly to the front counter and waited patiently for someone to help her get easy. Marcia Ashcroft looked up from some documents and gave him a friendly smile. Good morning. How can I help you? The woman hesitated for a few seconds before speaking. I don't know if this is important enough for the police. Tell me. The elderly woman took a deep breath. Someone is breaking into my apartment and stealing my green balls of wool. For a moment, all activity seemed to stop. One officer stopped writing. Another slowly raised his head. Oliver glanced at Arthur. Arthur closed his eyes for a second as if trying to gather what little patience he still had, but the lady continued speaking with absolute sincerity. He's not taking any money. Nor my few pieces of jewelry. Nor even the dishes I inherited from my mother. Only the green balls of yarn disappear. Every week, one is missing. A few officers exchanged puzzled glances. One cleared his throat to hide a smile. Arthur finally put the file down on his desk and politely approached. Mrs. Wilkins. Agnes Wilkins. Mrs. Wilkins, I understand your concern, I do. But right now the entire station is working on some pretty urgent matters. I promise you that when we have more availability, someone will be able to look into what happened. The old woman lowered her head slowly. I understand. She tried to smile, although her eyes were starting to water. Sorry for the inconvenience. She turned slowly and walked toward the exit, clutching the basket tightly to her chest. Marcia watched as the woman left the station, her stomach tightening. She waited barely a second before closing the folder in front of her. Excuse me. She didn't even finish her sentence. She hurried after the old woman. Arthur looked up just in time to see her walk through the door. Miss Ashcroft. Marcia paused in the doorway and turned around with an expression so innocent that one would have thought she had no intention of disobeying an order. Yes. Come back immediately. She smiled casually. I'm only going to talk to the lady for 5 minutes. It's none of your business. A little bit now. Yes, detective. Arthur frowned. No, yes. No. Marcia smiled even wider. Well, I'll be right back. And before Arthur could respond, she ran after the old woman. The detective stood motionless for several seconds, staring at the closed door. He didn't know if he was more annoyed or more horrified by the gall with which the secretary had just disobeyed a direct order in front of the entire station. At that moment, Oliver walked calmly past him with a file under his arm. I see you heed him so much. Arthur let out a long sigh. That woman never listens to me. The only thing saving grace is that she's an excellent secretary. Oliver suppressed a smile. Arthur continued to stare at the door for a moment before muttering, almost to himself. Someday that woman is going to end up in trouble. Emma Ashcroft didn't even look up from the document she was sorting when she heard Arthur's comment. She probably answered with absolute calm, but you should know her by now. When there's an injustice, Marcia always ends up getting involved, even if no one asks her to. Oliver turned his head slightly toward the young secretary and smiled secretly. Like you did last time with those hungry children who decided to steal a loaf of bread. Emma closed her eyes for a moment. Don't remind me. Why? It was quite a memorable scene. She put her pen down on the desk and looked at him with a mixture of embarrassment and annoyance. Because if I meet that baker again, I'm going to hit him with his own bread again, and this time I'll surely end up in jail. In jail. Oliver couldn't help but laugh. It was the first time he had seen Emma truly embarrassed since he had known her. Although he was still convinced that the baker had gotten exactly what he deserved, he still Remember the scene perfectly. Two completely malnourished children had to steal a single loaf of bread to feed their younger siblings. The baker, far from feeling compassion, had grabbed them by the arm and started yelling at them in front of the entire market, calling them criminals and threatening to hand them over to the police. Emma had intervened without thinking twice. First, she tried to convince the man to let them go. Then she tried to reason with him. And when the baker pushed one of the little ones, she lost all patience. She took the same loaf of bread that the man was holding and began to hit him with it over and over again while scolding him in front of half the market, and Oliver could still hear the screams. "That's for pushing a child. P. And that's for not having a bit of heart. P. And that's for charging a fortune for bread that looks like a rock. P." When he arrived, the baker was trying to cover his head with his hands while Emma continued to chase him all over the street. He had no choice but to carry her over his shoulder as if she were a sack of potatoes to prevent the scandal from getting any bigger. The strangest thing was that Emma hadn't stopped protesting for a single second the entire way. She had kept pointing her finger at the baker while laying a series of insults so original that Oliver still remembered some of them. He smiled at the thought. "By the way, I've always wanted to ask you something." Emma raised an eyebrow. "What? Where did she learn all those words? I have to admit that even I didn't know existed some of them." She let out a long sigh and shook her head slowly. "If you want an explanation, ask Marcia, her cousin." "Exactly." Oliver looked even more confused. "She was the one who taught them to him." Emma finished sorting through a group of documents before answering. "When we were little, we lived near the port. Our house was so close to the docks that, if we opened the windows, we could clearly hear the sailors arguing from the kitchen."
"Right."
Oliver started smiling even before she finished her explanation. "And I suppose those gentlemen didn't exactly use the language of a poet, Emma gave a little laugh. "Let's just say they greatly expanded our vocabulary. And your aunt never heard them repeat those words."
"Of course she did. And what happened?"
Emma smiled innocently. "She washed our mouths out with soap twice." Oliver could no longer contain his laughter. Arthur looked up for a moment to observe them. He didn't understand how Oliver still had the strength to laugh after 3 days of practically no sleep. At that very moment, the front door opened again. Marcia walked in beside Mrs. Wilkins, who now seemed much calmer than she had a few minutes before. Arthur glanced at the pocket watch that was clipped to his waistcoat. Then he looked up slowly. "Miss Ashcroft." Marcia smiled very naturally.
"Yes."
Arthur closed the watch with a little snap. "He told me it would be 5 minutes. She looked at the watch for a few seconds and then looked back at it. "They seemed short to me." Oliver let out a low laugh. Even Emma had to bite her lip to keep from smiling. Arthur took a deep breath. He was convinced that this woman was capable of exhausting the patience of the calmest man in all of England.
"Well?"
he finally asked with resignation. "What did you find out, in those 5 minutes? Marcia stepped forward. "I found out that Mrs. Wilkins lives in a boarding house in Veet Chapel, that the thefts began about a month ago, that no money ever disappears, that the doors are always locked from the inside, and that only green balls of wool are missing. Besides, exactly the same thing happens every Thursday." Arthur studied her for a few seconds. "All that he learned in 40 minutes.
38,
Marcia corrected with a smile. Arthur sighed again. "Very well. Write Mrs. Wilkins' statement and file it, Kist. When we've finished with the important cases, Marcia interrupted him in a surprisingly sweet voice.
Would you mind if I went to see the boarding house this afternoon?
Arthur looked up slowly.
Yes, not even a little.
No, she smiled again.
Then I'll go when I'm done for the day.
Arthur opened his mouth to reply, but closed it immediately. He was beginning to understand that arguing with Marcia Askrova was a losing battle before it even began. Oliver approached slowly and, making sure only Arthur could hear him, murmured, amusedly, I think.
Miss Askrova has already accepted the case.
Arthur watched as Marcia helped the old woman to sit down while offering her a cup of tea. Then he shook his head slowly.
That is precisely what worries me the most.
And without either of them yet realizing it, this case that the entire station considered the most ridiculous in London was about to become the most important investigation of their lives.
Outraves.
Chapter 2. The boarding house where everyone is a suspect.
That same afternoon, when her day at the police station was over, Marcia left the building adjusting her hat and putting the small notebook in which she had written down Mrs. Agnes Wilkins's statement in her bag. She had barely gone a few meters when she heard hurried footsteps behind her. She smiled before she even turned around. I knew she was not going to let me go alone. Emma reached her side, trying to catch her breath. I thought she was going to gag like a responsible secretary for once.
I thought about it for about 10 seconds. And then I remembered that you are just as curious as I am.
Emma let out a little laugh.
So we are lost.
The two of them set off towards Whitechapel, chatting about the strange case of the balls of yarn. The more they talked, the less sense it all seemed to make. If someone wanted to rob a humble house, the logical thing would have been to take the money, the crockery, or any valuable object. However, the thief entered every week only to take the green balls of yarn. Neither of them could come up with a reasonable explanation. The boarding house where Mrs. Wilkins lived was a 6-story building that had seen better days, eons. The facade showed old cracks. The paint had almost completely peeled off and the wooden stairs creaked with every step. Even so, the place was clean and it seemed that the tenants themselves did everything they could to keep it in good condition. The old woman opened the door as soon as she heard the knock.
Miss Askrova, I am very glad you have come.
We promised you this morning, Marcia replied, smiling.
And we tried to keep our promises.
Mrs. Wilkins invited them into her small apartment. It was a simple but an extraordinarily tidy dwelling. Several old photographs rested on a chest of drawers. The table was covered with a hand-woven tablecloth, and by the window stood a large basket filled with neatly arranged balls of wool. Before we begin, you will have to accept a cup of tea.
Marcia looked at Emma.
Emma smiled.
Warmly?
While they drank their tea, the old woman answered all the questions that Marcia had been carefully writing down in her notebook. She explained that the burglaries always happened on Thursday afternoons, when she would go down to the patio for a few minutes to chat with the other neighbors. She never found the door forced open or the drawers rummaged through. Everything remained exactly the same, except for one detail: a green ball of wool was always missing. When they had finished their tea, Marcia closed her notebook and looked up and stood.
Mrs. Wilkins, would you mind if we spoke to some of your neighbors?
The old woman shook her head with a smile.
Not at all.
Perhaps some of them had seen someone come or go and thought nothing of it. The three of them left the apartment and began walking slowly through the old boarding house. They had barely reached the hallway when a curtain moved discreetly across the hall. Marcia pretended not to notice, but, out of the corner of her eye, she clearly saw a woman watching them. Suddenly, the door opened.
Good afternoon.
The woman came out quite naturally, as if she had been waiting for hours for an excuse to start a conversation.
Good afternoon.
Marcia replied.
I am Mrs. Patterson. I have lived here for 20 years.
She paused briefly before adding enthusiastically,
They have come about the murder.
Marcia blinked.
What murder?
The woman looked slightly disappointed.
Oh, so it hasn't happened yet, hasn't it?
Emma had to lower her head to hide her smile. Mrs. Wilkins sighed in resignation. Mrs. Patterson is convinced that someday she will discover a great crime.
Someday I will be right, the widow replied very seriously before hiding behind the curtain again.
The three of them continued walking when, suddenly, a horrible sound began to echo up and down the staircase.
Marcia looked up.
What was that?
The old lady smiled resignedly.
Mr. Collins, practicing the violin.
The off-key notes were so terrible that even Emma grimaced slightly.
How long has he been practicing?
15 years.
Emma's eyes widened.
And he still rehearses the same piece.
We all think so.
The two cousins exchanged a glance before suppressing their laughter. As they reached the next floor, an old man appeared with tiny glasses and a disassembled pocket watch in his hands.
Good afternoon, sir.
The man continued walking without answering.
Mrs. Wilkins raised her voice a little.
It's Mr. Barker.
He's a watchmaker.
Everyone thinks he's completely deaf.
The old man disappeared down the corridor without looking back.
A moment later, another door opened.
A thin woman appeared with a tape measure around her neck and a pincushion attached to her wrist. She eyed them with obvious distrust.
Who are you?
We're just asking a few questions, Marcia replied pleasantly.
Why?
Because Mrs. Wilkins has been robbed several times.
The seamstress folded her arms immediately.
Then they should start by asking the violinist.
No one who plays like that can be a good person.
Emma had to bite her lip to keep from laughing.
Marcia smiled politely.
And where were you last Thursday afternoon?
The woman blinked.
I
was
sewing.
Can you prove it?
The seamstress frowned.
Now it turns out I'm the suspect.
Not yet, Marcia replied with a smile.
But I asked the same question of everyone.
The woman seemed satisfied and went back into her apartment muttering that the violinist was still much more suspicious anyway, BB.
They had gone only a few yards when something gray ran between Emma's legs.
Ouch! All three of them looked down at the same time.
A large cat was crossing the corridor with a ball of wool between its teeth.
And General? A woman shouted from the end of the corridor.
The cat didn't even slow down.
It went up the stairs without any problem while several of the neighbors were leaving their apartments.
Another one of them.
Last week it was my handkerchief. And 2 days ago a glove disappeared.
Emma watched the animal disappear up the stairs.
I think I've just met the most notorious criminal in the boarding house.
Mrs. Wilkin let out a little laugh.
Poor General.
For several days. We all thought he was stealing my wool until a neighbor decided to lock him in her kitchen to check it out. He stayed there all afternoon, and yet when I returned to my apartment, another mother ball had disappeared.
Marcia wrote this down silently.
They continued interviewing several neighbors for almost an hour.
Everyone had a different theory.
Everyone suspected someone.
And none seemed to have any proof of anything.
As they were about to say goodbye, a woman sweeping the hallway commented almost casually.
Although things had only just begun to get strange since my nephew returned.
Marcia looked up immediately,
meekly.
What's your name?
Samuel Tarna.
He had only been back for 2 weeks.
He had been away from London for many years.
Marcia's heart skipped a beat. Nice.
Samuel Tarna.
She knew that name.
She was quite sure of it.
But try as she might, she could not remember where she had heard it.
Before they left, they returned to Mrs. Wilkins's apartment.
The old woman took the basket where she kept the wool and placed it on the table.
I wanted to show you exactly what I have left.
Marcia leaned over to observe her carefully while Emma did the same from the other side.
The balls were neatly arranged by color, and after counting them several times, they both discovered exactly the same detail.
Without saying a word, Marcia nudged her cousin's arm.
Emma understood immediately what she had seen and went through the basket a second time.
They both looked up at the same time.
Mrs. Wilkins was right. The only balls that were missing were the green ones.
There were none missing, white, blue, yellow, or brown.
Only the green ones.
Marcia slowly closed her notebook.
Not yet.
She understood why someone would be so interested in a few simple balls of wool, but she was absolutely convinced of one thing: this no longer seemed like the most ridiculous case in London.
With each passing minute, she felt more and more that a much bigger mystery lay behind these strange thefts.
Chapter 3. The Name Hidden in the Files.
The next morning, Marcia and Emma arrived at the police station well before the usual time. The building was still almost silent, and only a couple of officers were walking through the corridors with their first cups of tea. Most of the desks were still empty, which gave them an advantage that they both intended to take advantage of before the daily hustle and bustle began.
"I'll check the files on the first floor," Marcia said as she put her bag on the desk.
"Oh, then I'll go to the second.
Does a reference have to appear somewhere?"
Emma replied. The two of them immediately separated. The station's archives took up two entire floors. Dozens of wooden shelves reached almost to the ceiling and were filled with folders, logbooks, and files that had accumulated over the years. Finding a single name among such a mass of documents seemed like an endless task, but neither of them was willing to give up.
Marcia began to go through file after file with surprising speed.
Owen. She would open a folder, read a few pages, write down names, dates, and addresses in her notebook, and move on to the next. Little by little, she filled several pages with small observations that only she seemed capable of understanding. Upstairs, Emma was doing exactly the same thing. Every time she came across a reference related to Samuel Turner, she copied it carefully, although more often than not, she ended up discovering that it was someone else with the same last name. The hours began to pass without either of them noticing. Marcia was so focused on going through a thick file that she didn't even hear the door open behind her. Arthur Blackcott had just entered the room.
Files.
He stood there watching her for several minutes without saying a word. He watched her quickly turn the pages, write notes without stopping, and replace exactly where it belonged to Balik's before picking up the next one. She didn't look like a secretary at a police station. She looked like an investigator completely absorbed in a case. Finally, she decided to break the silence.
"Why are you looking for information about Samuel Turner?"
Marcia gave such a start that the pen flew out of her hand and the pile of papers she had just sorted ended up flying all over the table.
"My God."
Arthur managed to catch most of the papers before they hit the floor. Marcia took a deep breath as she tried to catch her breath.
"Myth.
He always does that. Only when someone is so focused that they don't hear anything." She held out her hand.
"Give them back to me."
Arthur calmly raised the sheets above his head. Marcia tried to reach them.
She couldn't.
She stood on her tiptoes.
"Neither."
She tried again, stretching her arm as far as she could. Arthur was still holding them with absolute calm.
"He was too tall."
"Give them back to me.
First, explain to me what you're doing.
No then no?
Marcia tried again to retrieve her notes. But Arthur raised his arm a little higher. She snorted in obvious annoyance.
You're unbearable.
Arthur could barely contain a smile.
That's what I heard.
Marcia crossed her arms in a gesture of defeat while continuing to glare at him. Arthur lowered his hand slightly, but not enough to return them.
Now, are you going to tell me why you're investigating one of my suspects, or do I have to guess?
Marcia stopped trying to reach for the sheets. She looked at him with genuine astonishment.
One of her suspects.
Arthur nodded slowly.
Samuel Tarnera.
Her eyes widened.
Prime suspect.
He nodded again in the affirmative.
He's the prime suspect in the jewel theft.
For a few seconds, neither of them said a single word. Marcia felt all the pieces start to fall into place inside her head, which was why that name had sounded so familiar. She had seen him several times while organizing documentation related to the jewel theft. Arthur finally, he placed the sheets on the table and waited with his arms folded.
Now it's your turn to speak.
Marcia took a deep breath and began to tell him everything from the beginning. She explained about Mrs. Agnes Wilkins' visit, the strange thefts of the balls of wool, the Vitae Chapel boarding house, the neighbors, the big get called General the Seamstress, who distrusted everyone, and the woman who had mentioned almost casually that her nephew, Samuel Tarner, had returned to London barely 2 weeks before, but not to be used before. She also told him about the basket with the balls of wool and about that detail that worried her so much. Only the ones the old woman called green disappeared. Arthur did not interrupt her once. He simply listened. When Marcia finished speaking, the detective remained completely silent for a few seconds. Finally, he sighed.
I don't believe in coincidences.
She smiled.
Neither.
Neither do I. Arthur went to the door.
Let's go.
Marcia looked at him confused.
Let's go.
Yes.
Where?
To the boarding house. She blinked several times.
She's coming with me.
We're going back to the boarding house together.
Marcia couldn't help but smile.
She's changed her mind.
No, exactly.
Then, Arthur opened the door to the archive room for her to go first. I just want to keep her from getting into trouble again. Marcia walked toward the exit, trying to hide the smile that threatened to appear on her face.
How thoughtful of him.
Arthur held the door for her as she crossed the hall.
Don't get used to it.
I'm not promising anything. The two of them walked in silence to the main office. When they arrived, they found Emma putting several documents into her leather bag. Almost at the same time, Marcia put her notebook on the desk to check that she hadn't forgotten anything before leaving. They both looked up at the same time.
Did you find anything?
They both stared at each other for barely a second before bursting out laughing. I found Samuel Tarner's name in the jewel theft files, Marcia said.
And I found exactly the same thing, Emma replied as she closed her bag. I think we should go back to the boarding house as soon as possible.
That's what I was thinking. At that moment, Oliver came out of his office, finishing putting on his coat. Seeing Arthur with his hat in one hand and the two cousins clearly preparing to leave, he understood immediately what was happening. He moved a little closer, and trying to make sure only Arthur could hear him, asked quietly,
"Are they going to the boarding house too?"
Arthur let out a long sigh.
"Of course. We can't have these women getting into trouble by themselves."
Oliver finished adjusting his coat and smiled resignedly. He was thinking exactly the same thing. If Samuel Tarner is behind all this, I suspect this visit is going to cause us quite a bit of trouble. Arthur nodded without taking his eyes off Marcia, who was still checking for the third time that she had her notebook.
I think so too.
A moment later, the four of them left the police station together.
Marcia and Emma walked in front talking animatedly about everything they hoped to discover at the boarding house, exchanging theories and laughing at increasingly outlandish possibilities. A few steps behind them were Arthur and Oliver, much, much more serious than the two cousins, watching every movement on the street while sharing the same concern. Because for the first time since that strange case of the green balls of yarn began, the two detectives had exactly the same feeling. This investigation was about to get much more complicated than any of the four of them imagined.
Chapter 4. Where everyone seems to know more than they're letting go. When the four of them arrived at the Vitae Chapel, boarding house Marcia and Emma, they walked ahead talking about everything they had discovered in the archives. While Arthur and Oliver walked a few steps behind, discreetly observing the building and the people who came and went, the closer they got, the more convinced the two detectives became that this strange case of the balls of yarn could be related to the theft of the jewels, although neither of them was willing to admit it yet.
Nya plan that yet.
They had barely crossed the main door when a curtain moved on the first floor. A second later, the door flew open and Mrs. Patterson appeared, smiling with the enthusiasm of someone who had been waiting for hours for something interesting to happen. And there they were.
Marcia smiled back.
"Good afternoon, Mrs. Patterson."
The widow barely responded to the greeting. All her attention was fixed on Arthur. She looked him up and down for a few seconds, looked back at Marcia, and ended up smiling with obvious satisfaction. So her fiancé did come after all.
Arthur stood completely still.
"What?" "What her fiancé?" repeated the woman with absolute naturalness.
"They make a charming couple."
Marcia opened her eyes wide, while Emma immediately lowered her head to hide her laughter.
Arthur cleared his throat with visible discomfort.
"Ma'am, I think there's a slight misunderstanding."
Mrs. Patterson made a dismissive gesture with her hand, as if she had already heard that explanation far too many times.
"Sure, sure. They all say the same thing at first." And without giving them a chance to respond, he re-entered his apartment. An uncomfortable silence reigned for a few seconds. Oliver coughed softly to hide his laughter. Emma could no longer look at either of them without a smile escaping.
Arthur slowly turned his head toward Marcia.
"Do you find that amusing?"
She made a great effort to remain serious.
"A little."
"I didn't imagine it." Oliver finally let out a small laugh. Arthur glanced at him from the corner of his eye.
"Don't start, too."
They continued walking through the building, the old wooden staircase creaking under their feet. Then the unmistakable sound of Mr. Collins' violin was heard again, or rather a succession of out-of-tune notes that seemed to be fighting each other.
Arthur made a grimace.
"That's supposed to be music." Mrs. Wilkins, who had just come out of her apartment when she heard they had arrived, sighed with resignation.
"Mr. Collins practices every day."
"For how long?"
Oliver asked.
15 years.
Oliver raised an eyebrow.
"Then I must admit that he is a very persistent man,"
Emma replied quietly.
"Or very optimistic." The two cousins exchanged a smile while Arthur shook his head slowly. A short time later, they began to visit the neighbors again. This time it was Arthur who led most of the questions, while Marcia remained a few steps behind, observing everything attentively and taking notes of those small details that seemed to go unnoticed by the others. The first to open the door for them was the seamstress. As soon as she saw the two detectives, she immediately crossed her arms.
"I told you yesterday that I stole no yarn balls."
Arthur spoke calmly.
"We have not come to accuse you of anything. We only want to ask you a few questions about Samuel Tarner." The woman seemed to think about it for a few seconds.
"I do not know him very well.
You've seen him talking to someone at the boarding house. To the watchmaker.
Arthur looked up slightly, yay.
Mr. Barker.
Yes, but he's deaf.
The seamstress frowned in genuine surprise.
Deaf.
That's what they told us.
The woman let out a short laugh.
Well, it must be with you, because I've seen him talking to Samuel several times.
Arthur and Oliver exchanged a quick glance.
That answer didn't fit with what they knew.
When they left the apartment, Arthur decided to look for the watchmaker immediately.
They found him calmly leaving his apartment with a disassembled pocket watch in his hands.
Good afternoon, Mr. Barker.
The old man continued walking as if no one had said a single word.
Arthur tried again, raising his voice a little.
He got no answer. Convinced that the man really wasn't hearing anything, he continued walking beside Oliver down the corridor.
Marcia, on the other hand, hung back for a few seconds.
She waited until both detectives had moved away a little, and pretending to adjust her bag on her shoulder, discreetly dropped it, a metal spoon which was resting on a small table placed against the wall. The noise echoed throughout the staircase. It was barely an instant. But it was enough.
Mr. Barker turned his head slightly toward the sound before continuing to walk as if he were completely deaf.
Marcia smiled to herself. He was not completely deaf. When she looked up, she discovered that Arthur and Oliver had also noticed the detail.
Neither of them said a single word, but the brief exchange of glances between them was enough to tell them that they had seen exactly the same thing. Without having to say a word, the four of them continued walking down the corridor, feeling as if they had just uncovered the first major lie of this investigation. After confirming that Mr. Barker was not as deaf as everyone in the boarding house believed, the four of them continued walking through the building until they stopped in front of Margaret Turner's apartment. Arthur knocked several times and waited patiently for an answer, but no one answered the door. He tried again a few seconds later with exactly the same result.
Mrs. Wilkins, who had remained with them throughout the visitor, approached slowly and explained that Margaret had left early that morning and would probably not return until late afternoon.
Arthur stood watching the door for a few moments before asking, quote, "Does Samuel live with her?"
"Yes.
He has occupied the back room since he returned to London."
The old woman hesitated a moment before adding, "If you think it might be of any help, I can let you in.
I am the landlady of the boarding house and Margaret would never object. Everyone here wants to find out who is entering this building."
Arthur exchanged a quick glance with Oliver and they both nodded without saying a word.
Mrs. Wilkins took a small key from her apron pocket and opened the door. The apartment was modest and surprisingly tidy. There were no luxuries of any kind, but everything was kept clean and neatly arranged. Several plates were neatly stacked on a small table. A sewing machine occupied one corner of the room and by the window that seemed to receive much more care than the building itself.
"Samuel's room is at the back," the old woman explained. Arthur went in first, followed by Oliver, while Marcia and Emma looked intently at every corner. The bedroom was small and simple. There was a neatly made bed, a wooden chair, a bedside table and a wardrobe with a few neatly folded items of clothing. Nothing seemed out of place. Arthur began to search the drawers of the desk. In the first he found only a few unimportant papers. The second was full of neatly folded socks and the third remained completely empty. Oliver inspected the inside of the wardrobe, while Emma checked the window, the wooden frame and even the sill, but none of them found anything that could connect Samuel Turner with the theft of the jewels. Marcia, however, paid no attention to the furniture. While the others searched drawers, cupboards, and windows, she walked, slowly looking only at the floorboards, as if expecting to find
something that had gone unnoticed by everyone.
Goya.
When she reached the bed, she stopped, stood motionless for a few seconds, and finally bent down to pick up a small thread of green wool that had been caught between two planks. Arthur came over immediately.
What did he find?
Marcia raised her hand to show him.
A small piece of wool.
Arthur studied it for a few seconds.
It probably belongs to Mrs. Wilkins.
She shook her head slowly.
I'm almost certain Mrs. Wilkins has never been in this room before.
Arthur looked at the small piece of thread again. It was such a simple observation that it was obvious, and yet neither he nor Oliver had considered it. Without arguing or trying to contradict her, he took a small paper envelope from his inside coat pocket and handed it to her.
Keep it here.
Marcia raised an eyebrow.
Are you going to keep it? From now on, Malo?
Yes. She smiled for only a moment as she carefully placed the small sample inside the envelope. Oliver watched the scene without saying a word. No one commented, but all three of them understood that something important had just happened. For the first time since this investigation began, Arthur had accepted an observation from Marcia without arguing. It was a small change, but everyone had noticed it. After one more search of the apartment and after checking that there was nothing else of interest, they left the room. Mrs. Wilkins relocked the door and the four of them began to walk slowly down the old wooden staircase.
Yes.
Marcia was walking a few steps ahead when one of the steps gave way slightly under her weight. It all happened so quickly that she barely had time to react. She tried to grab hold of the railing, but she didn't quite reach it. Arthur reacted on pure instinct, reaching out and catching her firmly around the waist before she could fall. For a few moments, neither of them said a word. Marcia slowly looked up and found that Arthur was still holding her with the same firm grip. The two of them were so close that, for a moment, the rest of the building seemed to disappear. Just then, a door flew open. Mrs. Patterson appeared holding a basket full of freshly washed clothes. She watched them for barely a second and her face lit up with a smile of absolute satisfaction. Without missing a beat, she turned her head towards the interior of her apartment and shouted excitedly,
"Rose! I told you they were engaged."
A voice was heard from the back of the house.
"Tired.
Leave them alone, Margaret." Mrs. Patterson replied with obvious indignation.
"I am not disturbing them.
I am watching." Emma could no longer contain her laughter. Oliver had to turn to the window to hide the laughter that threatened to escape. Marcia felt her cheeks begin to burn and she quickly moved away from Arthur while he cleared his throat with visible discomfort and adjusted the collar of his coat as if that would restore his composure. Mrs. Patterson smiled smugly again.
"Don't worry. I'll keep the secret."
Arthur closed his eyes for a moment.
"Ma'am, is there no secret?"
"Of course not," she replied with an even wider smile. "That's what my late husband used to say." And completely pleased with herself, she went back into her apartment before Arthur could answer. The four of them finally left the boarding house in a silence that lasted for several blocks. This visit had completely changed the direction of the investigation. They were no longer simply following the trail of strangers, hangers, ball thefts. Now they had a suspect in connection with the jewel theft, a watch that pretended to be completely deaf, and a small piece of green wool found in a room where it should never have been. Finally, Arthur broke his silence. "We'll be back tomorrow." Marcia turned her head toward him with an amused smile. "We'll be back." It took Arthur barely a second to realize what he had just said.
"I mean, Oliver and I will be back."
Martian didn't respond. He just smiled as he continued walking, and that smile was enough for Arthur to understand that correcting himself was completely useless.
As the four of them returned to the police station, none of them imagined that the answer to the jewel theft was not hidden in a safe nor in a mansion, nor even in the hands of a famous thief Udion. It was hidden in a simple ball of wool.
Chapter 5. The Wrong Color. The next morning began much quieter than usual at the police station. For the first time in several days, no new major cases had arrived, and Arthur Blackott took advantage of the rare moment of calm to sort through all the files related to the jewel theft. Oliver was reviewing witness statements, while Emma had occupied a nearby table with a mountain of reports for the last month. Marcia, for her part, still couldn't get the balls of wool out of her head. Da gekembatsis. You're still thinking about them, aren't you? Arthur asked without looking up. The view of a file. Yes, I'm beginning to think that those balls of yarn interest him more than the jewels. Because I think someone made a mistake. Arthur put his pen down on the table.
Who?
Marcia smiled.
That's precisely what I still don't know.
As they talked, Emma turned from page to page with surprising speed. Suddenly she stopped, turned back a few pages and picked up another file to compare. Oliver watched her.
Did she find anything?
Emma looked up slowly.
I think she did.
The three of them approached the table. Emma placed three open files side by side. Look at these observations. Arthur began to read. Small pieces of wool found by a window. He opened the second. Fragments of green thread stuck to a splinter of wood. He picked up the third. A small piece of wool was found, of no significance to the investigation. Arthur frowned. How did we not see this before? Oliver sighed. Because we were looking for footprints, tools, and jewelry. No one thought a piece of wool could be of any significance. Emma carefully opened a small evidence envelope. Inside lay the a piece of wool found during one of the robberies. Arthur then took out the envelope in which he had kept the thread found in Samuel Tarner's room. He placed them side by side on the desk. Marcia was the first to speak. They are the same. Emma nodded. Same thickness. Same fabric. They even seem to have been dyed exactly the same color. For the first time since the investigation began, the four of them were certain that the two cases were connected. There was no longer any doubt. Samuel Tarner was behind the thefts of the balls of yarn. What they did not yet know was who was leading the theft of the jewels. Arthur slowly sealed the envelopes. Let's go back to the boarding house. Oliver smiled. I thought he would say that. The two detectives left the office convinced that they would go alone. However, when they opened the main door of the station, they found Marcia and Emma waiting for them on the sidewalk with the same innocent expressions as always. Oliver let out a sigh. I'm lost every time that woman smiles at me like that. Arthur glanced at him sideways. I have no idea what she's talking about. Oliver smiled.
Of course I do.
Arthur watched Marcia as she waved. That woman is going to drive me crazy. Oliver let out a small laugh. And yet she's going to be there every time he gets into trouble. Arthur remained silent for a few seconds. He didn't answer. He simply started walking. Marcia and Emma stood in front of them talking excitedly about the balls of yarn, the colors and all the possibilities they could think of. What if the person stealing the wool can't tell the colors apart? Marcia asked, almost as if she were thinking aloud. Eek out. Emma looked at her curiously.
Why does she say that?
I don't know, it's just a feeling. Arthur reached out to listen to the conversation, but decided not to intervene. There was still no evidence. When they reached the boarding house, the unmistakable sound of the violin greeted them again from the third floor. All four of them stopped at exactly the same time. Arthur closed his eyes. Oliver
let out a long sigh.
Marcia looked at the ceiling.
Emma shook her head slowly.
Is she still practicing the same song?
Arthur asked.
Mrs. Wilkins appeared in the corridor with a resigned smile that she hasn't had for 15 years.
Meanwhile,
in an old abandoned warehouse on the other side of London, Samuel Turner was placing a ball of wool on a wooden table.
Across from him, a man whose face was hidden by the darkness stared at the ball for barely a second. Then he slammed his fist on the table.
Samuel
took a small step back again.
What's the matter?
The man picked up the ball of wool with obvious irritation.
I told you to bring your eyes.
Samuel looked at him in confusion.
That's what I did.
The boss took a deep breath to contain his anger.
Those are green?
Samuel looked at the ball of wool again.
He frowned.
Green.
Yes, green.
Samuel shook his head slowly.
They're not red.
The man remained completely still for several seconds.
For the first time, instead of getting angry, he simply looked at Samuel with a strange expression. As if he had just understood something.
And without saying another word, he picked up the ball of yarn and put it on the table.
Chapter 6. The Mistake That Solved the Case.
The next morning, the police station seemed to have regained only a small part of its usual order. Officers were still coming and going with files under their arms, but there was no longer the same chaos of the previous days. Arthur Black Quote was bent over his desk reviewing for the third time the reports related to the theft of the jewels Nitas. While Oliver Pembroke compared the samples of lan found in Samuel Turner's room with the small traces that Emma had discovered in some of the old cases Marcia and Emma. Marcia and Emma worked at a nearby table.
Emma had several reports open in front of her, all marked with small folded pieces of paper.
And Marcia kept staring at the two balls of yarn the lady had Wilkins had lent them to him the night before to compare with the samples.
One was red. The other green.
He had placed them side by side so many times that Arthur was beginning to wonder if he was going to end up dreaming about Lana.
If you look at those balls of yarn for another 5 minutes, I think they're going to start confessing, he muttered without looking up.
Marcia smiled slightly.
Maybe that would be more useful than some of the suspects.
Oliver gave a small laugh from his desk.
Arthur glanced at him sideways.
He didn't encourage her.
At that moment, a young constable entered holding a letter.
Où suis-je? Detective Penroke, there's a reply.
From Dr. Edison.
Oliver
looked up immediately.
Ah, finally.
Arthur frowned.
Dr. Edison.
Emma and Marcia glanced at each other with smiles that they tried too late to hide it.
Arthur put his pen down.
Why are you smiling?
No reason, Emma replied too quickly.
When one of you says no reason, it usually means that someone is about to regret not asking sooner.
Marcia picked up the letter Oliver had just opened.
It's a consultation we sent a few days ago.
Arthur stared at her.
A medical consultation.
A visual consultation, she corrected herself.
Visual.
Emma approached the table with the two balls of yarn.
About people who confuse colors.
Arthur and Oliver exchanged a look.
Excuse me?
Arthur asked.
Marcia began to read the letter aloud.
The doctor explained that there were people who could see shapes, distances, and objects perfectly, but they didn't distinguish certain colors in the same way as most people. He mentioned a disorder that had been known for decades and was associated with the name John Dalton, in which some patients confuse shades of red and green. Or perceive them so similarly that they could mistake them without realizing it.
When Marcia finished reading, Emma could no longer contain her smile.
Color blindness, she said with satisfaction.
Arthur continued looking at the balls of yarn, not fully understanding.
And what does that have to do with Samuel Turner?
Emma took a deep breath, as if she were going to explain something to a very intelligent but very stubborn child.
Samuel Tarner steals the green balls of yarn.
We already know that. But perhaps he doesn't believe they're green.
Oliver slowly put the file on the table.
Marcia picked up the green ball and then the red one.
The gang leader needed red balls of yarn.
Not green.
Red.
But Samuel, if he mixes up certain, could have entered Mrs. Wilkins's apartment convinced that he was taking the right color.
But what color?
Arthur looked first at the green ball, then at the red one, and finally at Marcia.
He stole the green ones, thinking they were red.
Exactly, she replied. For a few seconds no one said anything.
Then Oliver let out a slow sigh.
That would explain why the thief always took the same color and yet he seemed to be making a mistake.
Emma nodded.
And it would also explain why Margaret said that as a child Samuel never chose his clothes well.
Arthur rested both hands on the desk.
So Samuel wasn't stealing the green balls of yarn because he needed them.
He stole them because he was asked for red ones and confused the color.
Marcia smiled.
Now she gets it.
Arthur looked at her dryly.
I got it a moment ago.
Sure.
Don't start.
Emma had to turn away to hide her laughter.
Oliver picked up one of the wool samples and placed it next to the red ball.
But we still don't know what they wanted the red wool for.
Marcia thought for a few seconds before making a note.
Arthur looked up.
What?
Exits. Windows. Back doors. Escape routes. Escape routes.
If someone left a small red thread in the right place, it would be much easier to identify a route at night.
Oliver nodded slowly.
Makes sense.
A red thread stands out more than a green one.
Arthur looked at the wool sample found in Samuel's room.
And since Samuel was wearing the wrong color, the men in the gang were leaving signs that weren't as useful or that might attract the attention of someone who did look at the details, Emma added, oafs.
Arthur looked back at Marcia. I like you. She tried to appear nonchalant.
I just stared at the floor and the of wool. For hours, too.
Patience is a virtue.
Not when you use it to meddle in police investigations.
Marcia opened her mouth to reply, but Emma spoke before the discussion could take up the entire morning.
There's still something missing.
Oliver turned to her.
Emma picked up her notebook and pulled up an entry from the previous day. The seamstress said she'd seen Samuel talking to Mr. Barker several times.
Arthur nodded.
The watchmaker.
The watchmaker who everyone thinks is deaf, Marcia added.
Oliver slowly closed the file.
But he's not it.
For a few seconds, all four were silent.
Mr. Barker's name seemed to fall on the table with just the right weight of suspicion.
No one would suspect an old man who appeared to be deaf, Emma said.
I could overhear conversations in any corridor without anyone paying attention to what I said, Marcia added.
Arthur straightened slowly.
And if Samuel spoke to him, Barker could be the one giving the instructions.
Oliver reached for his hat. Then we have to keep an eye on him.
Marcia and Emma exchanged a glance that was too quick.
Arthur saw her.
No, Marcia blinked innocently.
I didn't say anything, she thought.
You can't arrest me for thinking.
Don't tempt me.
Oliver stood up trying not to smile.
Black quote, perhaps we should organize a discreet surveillance.
Arthur didn't take his eyes off Marcia.
Yes.
A discreet surveillance carried out by detectives, not secretaries with a tendency to appear in dangerous places.
Emma closed her notebook calmly.
What a specific phrase.
It's based on recent experience, Arthur replied. Marcia gathered up the balls of yarn and carefully put them away in a box.
Then I suppose you'll take care of it?
Arthur narrowed his eyes, as if he found that calm answer far more suspicious than any protest.
That's what we'll do. She smiled. Perfect. And that smile was precisely what made Arthur feel that something had gone terribly wrong.
Arthur remained staring at Marcia for several seconds without taking his eyes off her. He had learned to recognize that seemingly innocent smile, and from experience, he knew that it almost always ended up meaning trouble. Marcia, of course, met his gaze with absolute calm, as if she had never done anything prudent in her entire life. Emma scratched softly to hide a smile, while Oliver began to suspect exactly the same thing as Arthur.
What are they planning?
Arthur finally asked. Marcia's eyes widened.
Us?
Yes.
Nothing.
Arthur crossed his arms. That answer worries me even more. Emma intervened with absolute naturalness. We are just going to organize some documents. Oliver lowered his head to hide his laughter. Arthur sighed resignedly. I don't know why I have the feeling that none of the four of us is going to have a quiet day. A couple of hours later, when Arthur and Oliver left for another errand related to the jewel heist, Marcia waited barely a few seconds before getting up from her chair. Emma didn't even ask.
Come on, let's go.
The two of them left the station as calmly as anyone would have gone out to buy bread. When they reached the Whitechapel boarding house again, they found the building as bustling as ever. Mr. Collins continued to wage a personal war with his violin. Mrs. Patterson kept a discreet watch from behind a curtain, and Mrs. Wilkins sat knitting by the window. Mr. Barker was just emerging from his apartment with several pocket watches in a small wooden box. Marcia eyed him askance. Then she glanced at Emma. Emma understood at once. The two of them began to walk down the corridor, talking in a voice loud enough for anyone to hear.
Do you hear the news?
Asked Marcia.
Which one?
They say the new jewels are arriving tonight at Ashcroft's Jewelers, in Wellington Street. Emma's eyes widened in feigned excitement.
The ones from France.
Those very ones. They say they're a real fortune. The two of them continued walking slowly. Marcia lowered her voice a little then, but not so much that the watch could not hear her.
I hope they don't try to steal them.
Emma glanced discreetly towards Mr. Barker. I don't think anyone would be that reckless.
Marcia smiled.
She? She also moved a little closer to Emma. It doesn't really matter if we talk about it here. Emma understood the game immediately.
Sure.
Then she glanced sideways at the watchmaker. Mr. Barker is deaf. The old man continued walking at exactly the same pace as always. He didn't turn his head. Didn't make any comment. But, for just an instant, a tiny smile appeared at the corner of his lips before disappearing again. Marcia caught sight of her. Emma too. The two of them continued walking as if they hadn't noticed the thing at all. Only when they had left the building did they start to smile.
He fell, Marcia murmured.
Emma nodded. And she didn't even have to try. Now all that's left is for Arthur not to kill us. The two of them looked at each other. Then burst out laughing. Meanwhile, Arthur and Oliver were returning to the police station much earlier than expected. Arthur looked around the office, frowning.
Where are they?
No one answered. Oliver looked at the two empty chairs. I don't like this. Arthur immediately went out into the corridor. Has anyone seen Miss Sascrov? One of the officers raised his head. They left quite a while ago. Arthur closed his eyes for a moment. Of course.
Oliver was already putting on his coat.
I'm coming with you.
The two of them practically ran out.
Almost an hour later, when Arthur was starting to imagine the worst-case scenarios, the main door of the station opened again.
Marcia and Emma entered calmly, chatting to each other as if they had just returned from a pleasant walk.
Arthur walked straight towards them.
Where were they?
They both stopped.
Marcia replied with absolute calm.
Working.
Arthur took a deep breath.
You don't work investigating suspects.
Emma smiled cautiously.
Well, no. Just, no.
Marcia exchanged a glance with her cousin. We already solved the case. That sentence caused the entire station to fall silent.
Arthur blinked.
Oliver, too.
What did you say?
Arthur asked slowly.
Marcia smiled.
They're gonna try to rob the Ashcroft Jewelry Shop on Wellington Street tonight.
Arthur remained completely still.
How do you know?
The two of them began to tell them exactly what they had done at the boarding house. As the explanation progressed, Arthur's face gradually changed. First surprise, then disbelief, and finally anger. An anger that Oliver knew all too well. When they finished talking, Arthur took a deep, deep breath.
You went to set a trap for the prime suspect.
Marcia nodded with a small smile.
Yes, without telling us.
Well, without telling us.
Yes.
Arthur took a step towards her.
She's gone completely mad.
The whole station fell absolutely silent. No one moved a single paper.
No one wrote. No one breathed too loudly.
Marcia took a small step back.
Emma did exactly the same.
Arthur continued talking, although his voice was no longer raised, which was much more worrying.
Do you realize that this man could have been armed?
Marcia lowered her head slowly.
Do you realize that he could have followed her?
Do you realize that either of you could have been hurt, eh?
Marcia replied in a near whisper.
Yes.
Arthur was silent for several seconds.
Then he spoke much more slowly.
Don't do that again.
Marcia looked up slowly, Ollie.
For the first time since they had known each other, she didn't respond with a joke. She simply nodded.
All right.
Oliver watched the scene in silence. He had understood perfectly well that Arthur wasn't angry because Marcia had disobeyed an order. He was angry because she had been afraid. Meanwhile, on the other side of the office, several agents were pretending to work. One of them leaned discreetly toward his partner.
5 shillings says they end up getting married.
The other shook his head.
All too soon.
A third chimed in without looking up from his documents.
I say one of you will have to admit to being in love first.
Another agent smiled.
That will take months.
And the other two?
Someone asked, looking at Oliver and Emma.
Everyone turned their heads discreetly.
Oliver, completely oblivious to the betting, continued talking to Emma about the preparations for the night watch.
The first officer smiled.
Another 5 shillings says those go the same way.
The smiles began to multiply throughout the station. None of the 4 protagonists seemed to notice. They were too focused on preparing the operation that very night could an end to the case of the balls of yarn and the biggest jewel heist that the city had seen in a long time.
Chapter 7. The Secretaries Who Solved the Case. The raid began exactly on time. The Ashcroft Jewelers was completely dark, as if there was no one inside but behind the counters, hidden in the shadows and in the neighboring building.
Several police officers waited in absolute silence.
Arthur Blackwatt went over the operation one last time while watching the street from a window of the warehouse with you.
Remember, no one moves until I give the signal. As soon as they appear, we close all the exits.
The officers nodded.
Arthur then turned to Marcia and Emma.
And you two stay here.
No matter what happens, you don't leave the warehouse.
There are two officers guarding the door and you'll be completely safe.
They both answered at the same time.
Yes, detective.
Arthur eyed them with a hint of mistrust.
Promise.
Marcia smiled with that innocent expression that was already starting to make him nervous.
We promise.
Arthur stared at her for a few seconds.
Then he let out a resigned sigh. I don't know why I have the feeling I'm going to regret believing you.
Oliver let out a small laugh.
Come on, Black, Mushawk.
Everything's gonna be all right.
The two detectives left the warehouse and took their positions.
There was absolute silence for a few minutes.
Marcia paced back and forth while Emma sat next to an old wooden box trying to appear calm when she didn't feel anything.
Can you stop pacing?
She finally asked.
You're not making me nervous.
I'm already nervous.
Emma smiled.
You can tell.
Marcia went to the small window that looked out onto the street.
Do you think they'll come?
If Mr. Barquer overheard our conversation, they'll come.
She had barely finished saying it when a whistle broke the silence of the night.
Then another.
And another.
Seconds later, shouts began to be heard.
Police? Don't let him escape.
Down the alley.
Marcia took a step toward the door.
Emma immediately grabbed her arm.
Don't even think about it.
I just wanted to look.
That's what you said last time.
The two of them went to the window.
From there, they could make out part of the street.
They saw several men running in different directions while the officers tried to block their way and the police officers who had been guarding them left their posts to help.
Suddenly Arthur was chasing the man who seemed to be leading the gang.
And Oliver went after another thief who escaped around the corner of a narrow alley.
And Emma followed the scene with her eyes until Oliver disappeared.
He remained motionless for barely a second.
Then he looked at Marcia.
Don't move.
Marcia's eyes widened.
Embra.
I'll be right back.
Before her cousin could even begin to respond, she ran out of the door.
Marcia took a step to follow her, but at that very moment the door of the warehouse swung open again.
A man entered, almost out of breath.
It was the leader of the gang.
He slammed the door shut and began to look around frantically, trying to find a place to hide.
Imache.
Marcia felt her heart skip a beat.
The man still hadn't seen her.
She backed away slowly, trying to get to the other exit. But just then the thief turned his head.
Their eyes met.
You.
He exclaimed.
They both began to move at exactly the same time.
Marcia tried to get away.
The man ran toward her, but the two of them collided so hard that the thief lost his balance and fell backward into a closet and the door slammed shut.
Marcia remained perfectly still for a second, much too surprised to be able to react.
Then she heard the sound of the lock turning from inside.
She looked around quickly.
Against the wall was an old iron pipe that someone had left propped up between several boxes. He lifted it with both hands, and just before the door began to open, it went through the tube between the two handles of the cabinet. A second later, the knocking began.
Open me.
The cabinet shook again.
Get me out of here.
The old wood creaked dangerously.
Marcia took two steps back as she tried to catch her breath.
I think it worked.
The
The cabinet shook again so hard that a box fell from a nearby shelf.
Miss Ashcroft.
Arthur's voice echoed from the other end of the warehouse.
Marcia immediately looked up.
Arthur ran in, his face completely contorted.
He had lost sight of the gang leader, and for a few agonizing seconds he feared that he had found the very place where he had hidden Marcia and Emma.
Seeing her safe and sound, he let out a deep sigh of relief.
Marcia. She tried to smile.
I'm fine.
Arthur walked quickly towards her, ready to ask her if she was hurt.
Then, bang.
The cabinet shook again. Arthur froze moss. He looked at the wardrobe. At the tube running through the handles. Then he looked back at Marcia. For several seconds he said absolutely nothing. Finally he asked with an eerie calm.
Can you explain to me exactly how you managed to do this?
Marcia thought for a few seconds.
I would rather say it was a brilliant strategy.
At that very moment, the wardrobe shook again, accompanied by a long series of insults.
Arthur arched an eyebrow slowly.
The wardrobe shook again with such force that one of the hinges creaked alarmingly. Arthur narrowed his eyes.
Honestly. Before she could answer, a familiar voice came from the corridor.
Arthur.
Oliver appeared panting, his hair disheveled, his coat torn at one sleeve. Beside him came Emma, who was trying to catch her breath as she adjusted the hat that had been left completely askew after the chase. Arthur looked at them with obvious relief.
They got them.
Oliver smiled. At everyone. At that moment another knock was heard from the wardrobe.
Get me out of here.
Oliver looked at the closet, then at the iron pipe and finally at Marcia.
What happened here?
Arthur nodded at Marcia.
That's exactly what I'm trying to figure out.
Marcia smiled again. I insist it was a brilliant strategy.
Emma shook her head immediately.
Don't believe her.
Arthur looked at her.
It was an accident.
Emma felt absolutely calm.
Yes.
Arthur let out a long sigh.
That's what I thought.
Oliver couldn't help but laugh any longer. Although I must admit that it was an extraordinarily effective accident.
From inside the closet another knock was heard.
When I get out of here I'm gonna...
Arthur knocked lightly on the door with his knuckles.
Don't bother.
You're going straight to prison?
The man responded with a series of insults that made Marcia raise her eyebrows discreetly.
Oliver was still smiling.
Arthur turned to him.
What's so funny?
Oliver looked at Emma. Who, if it hadn't been for her, would probably still be fighting one of the thieves.
Arthur slowly turned his head toward Emma. For some reason, this was starting to worry him.
What did he do?
Emma looked a little embarrassed.
It was nothing serious.
Oliver laughed out loud.
Don't believe him.
Arthur folded his arms.
Mr. Penroke.
Oliver took a deep breath, trying to stop laughing.
One of the robbers managed to throw me to the ground. We were struggling and the man was much stronger than me. I thought I was gonna get away when suddenly Emma came running.
Arthur listened without taking his eyes off her.
Oliver continued. I expected him to call for help.
Emma cleared her throat.
I expected to do that too.
But I changed my mind.
Oliver continued.
He climbed on top of the robber.
There was complete silence.
Arthur blinked.
Marcia's eyes widened.
Emma started to blush.
Oliver couldn't stop laughing.
He literally climbed on top of him. Covered his eyes, pulled his hat off and started yelling at him to let go of me.
Emma tried to defend herself.
It was the only idea I could think of.
Oliver smiled.
And it worked.
The man was so surprised that I was able to put handcuffs on him.
Marcia couldn't help laughing anymore.
Arthur tried to keep a straight face for a few more seconds.
He failed.
He ended up laughing along with the others.
As the four of them left, another loud bang was heard from inside the closet.
Is there anyone out there?
Oliver pointed to the door.
I don't think he's enjoying his evening that much.
Arthur shook his head as he removed the iron pipe. As soon as he opened the door, two officers immediately grabbed the gang leader and put handcuffs on him.
With the arrest, the investigation was finally solved. Almost all of the stolen jewelry was recovered.
Samuel Tarner confessed to having participated in the robberies, believing that he always carried the right colored balls of yarn, and Mr. Barker ended up admitting that for years he had pretended to be completely deaf in order to hear all the conversations in the boarding house without arousing the slightest suspicion.
Mrs. Agnes Wilkins was finally calm again.
No one entered her apartment again.
And, above all, no one stole a single ball of wool from her.
By the end of the day, the police station was much livelier than usual. The agents were laughingly discussing the details of the capture while the newspapers were already beginning to report on the dismantling of the gang responsible for the theft of the jewels.
Oliver approached Emma as they all gathered up the last of their documents.
Would you allow me to accompany you home?
Emma looked up and smiled.
I would love to.
Marcia watched the scene askance.
Arthur did exactly the same.
The two of them exchanged a quick glance.
Neither said a word. But they both understood perfectly what was happening.
The only ones who still didn't seem to realize it were Oliver and Emma.
The four of them left the station together, but, after walking a few blocks, Arthur deliberately slowed down.
Marcia looked at him curiously.
What's going on?
Arthur made a slight motion with his head, signaling to the couple, who were walking several meters ahead of them.
Oliver and Emma continued to chat animatedly, completely oblivious to the world.
I think we should give them a little time, Arthur said.
Marcia smiled.
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Without realizing it, they began to walk much more slowly. An hour later, they finally arrived at the building where the two cousins lived. Oliver and Emma had already said goodbye a few minutes earlier, still chatting by the door.
Arthur accompanied Marcia to the entrance.
She smiled.
She's going to tell me again not to investigate again.
Arthur took a few seconds to respond.
Exactly.
Marcia waited.
He ended up sighing.
Though I'm starting to suspect he'll never listen to me.
She smiled with that mischievous expression that I knew all too well by now.
Probably not.
Marcia turned to enter the building, but Arthur stopped her. With a gentle gesture, barely holding her arm, she looked at him again. He remained silent for a few seconds before speaking, this time in a much lower voice.
There is one thing I do need you to promise me.
What?
That you won't put yourself in danger like that again.
Marcia tilted her head slightly.
Why?
Arthur held her gaze for a few long seconds. Then he smiled with a tenderness that he himself did not expect to show.
Because he would not forgive me.
Marcia felt her heart skip a beat note.
And why wouldn't she forgive him?
Arthur held her gaze for a few long seconds. Then he smiled, faintly took a small step towards her, and with a delicacy that took her completely by surprise, placed a hand on her back to let her into the building.
Come in.
Mar obeyed without taking her eyes off him. Arthur waited until she was completely across the threshold and then reached for the door. Before closing it, he spoke again with that half-smile that only she seemed capable of provoking in him.
That is the only mystery I am going to allow you to investigate.
Marcia frowned slightly and then.
Arthur held the
the door ajar for a few more seconds by Evans. After that, everything is going to change. Without giving her time to ask anything else, he gently closed the door. Masha remained motionless in the lobby of the building, staring at the wood of the door as if expecting it to open again at any moment. A slow smile appeared on her face. He had no idea what Arthur Blackwood had meant, but for the first time, since he had begun that absurd investigation over a few balls of wool, he understood that there were mysteries far more difficult to solve than any police case. Oki police case. And the most complicated one of all had just remained on the other side of that door.
Epilogue. The wedding, which began 30 minutes later. St. Michael's Church had never been so full.
Relatives, residents of the Vitae Chapel boarding house, police officers, journalists, Mrs. Agnes Wilkins, Mrs. Patterson, and practically half the city filled the pews waiting for the most talked about wedding in London to begin. Young. Well, the two most talked about weddings in London. Because that day not only were Arthur Blackwood and Marcia Ascrow getting married, but also Oliver Penrock and Emma Ascrow. There was just one small problem. There were no brides. And no grooms either. The priest looked at his pocket watch for the third time as their guests began to exchange puzzled glances. Mrs. Patterson sighed with complete relief. I knew this was going to happen. Mrs. Wilkins slowly turned her head towards him toward her. How could I have known? Because those two girls can't go a week without solving the case. One of the constables glanced toward the front door. And the detectives? Mrs. Patterson smiled. They're probably after them. As if those words had been a signal, a huge commotion began to be heard from outside the church. All the guests turned their heads at the same time. The church doors flew open and open. Marcia and Emma ran in laughing. Their wedding dresses were covered in dust, the hems completely smudged with mud, their hair disheveled and several white feathers caught in their hair. They both barely lifted their skirts to keep from tripping as they tried to catch their breath. 5 seconds later, Arthur and Oliver appeared. They both looked even worse, Morse. Their coats were torn, their boots covered in mud, and their hair was covered in feathers, Sims. Arthur was breathing hard and pointed at Marcia. We told them to stop investigating. Oliver, equally exhausted, looked at Emma. It was the wedding day. Emma smiled with absolute calm. We know. Marcia finished her explanation as if it were the most reasonable thing in the world. But a poor lady came crying because someone was stealing her chickens. Arturo's eyes widened. And you were dressed as bride's aunts. Marcia seemed surprised by the question. There was no time to change. The whole church burst into laughter. Mrs. Patterson nudged Mrs. Wilkins. See, I told you. Arthur ran a hand over his face, trying to regain some patience. We told them the police could take care of it. Emma replied matter-of-factly. Yes. And then? But you were busy getting ready for the wedding, Jorgens. Oliver shook his head slowly, unable to help but smile. And at least it was worth it. Mar nodded proudly. Yes. Emma added. He had been stealing widows' chickens for weeks to sell them at the market. Arthur closed his eyes for a second. Of course. Oliver let out a small laugh. That explains the chickens. Arthur then noticed the feathers stuck in Oliver's hair. What I still don't understand is where all those feathers came from. Oliver immediately looked at Emma. She started to blush, Mish. Marcia was already starting to laugh. Arthur crossed his arms. Oliver decided to answer for her.
He was struggling on the ground with one of the thieves when Emma came running up.
Arthur listened intently.
I thought she was going to scream for help or something, Oliver, continued Bali. But instead she found a huge sack full of feathers.
Emma muttered almost embarrassedly.
It was the first thing I saw. I threw it at him.
Marcia couldn't contain her laughter anymore.
Oliver continued talking.
The problem was that the sack exploded right on top of them both.
Arthur raised an eyebrow.
On both of them.
Oliver smiled.
For a few seconds neither of them could see anything at all.
Emma sighed.
She still didn't know if she had hit the thief or Oliver.
Marcia started laughing so hard that she had to lean on a benchie.
Arthur ended up laughing too.
Oliver shook his head.
Luckily, the thief was as confused as I was and I was able to put the handcuffs on him.
The priest cleared his throat with obvious patience.
If they finished solving the chicken case, perhaps, we could have the wedding.
The four of them looked at each other. Then began walking toward the altar.
Arthur stopped in front of Marcia.
He studied her for a few seconds. She had mud on her dress, a feather caught in her hair, and that mischievous smile that had been trying his patience for months.
With infinite delicacy he took her hand and kissed her knuckles.
And does she plan to keep getting into trouble?
She slightly inclined her head.
Arthur probably let out a resigned sigh.
Then I guess I'll spend the rest of my life getting her out of it.
A few steps away, Oliver stood in front of Emma. He smiled with that tenderness that he no longer tried to hide. Very carefully he removed a small feather that was still caught in her hair, and then kissed her forehead softly. Use.
Next time you want to save me.
Emma looked up.
Oliver smiled.
Try to throw the bag of feathers only at the thief.
Emma burst out laughing.
I'll try. The four of them started laughing at the same time.
The priest smiled resignedly.
Now, we can begin. And while the whole church burst out laughing again, no one had the slightest doubt that those four were going to continue solving mysteries for the rest of their lives, although probably none would be as unforgettable as the case that had begun with a few simple balls of wool. Ow, summon eyes.
Well, yes, it took me a little longer to upload this novel, but the truth is that it took me almost 2 days to finish it, and it was no wonder, because this time I had two couples, an investigation and a theft of balls of wool to solve. I confess that there were times when even I ended up laughing while imagining the scenes. I sincerely hope that you liked it as much as I did, because I really enjoyed writing it. I always tell you that I'm not a writer, I'm just a person with a huge imagination, Bukansen. I know that my novels are not going to win literary awards, but if any of them manage to make you smile, make you laugh, move you, or keep you company for a while, then for me, that is already the greatest award I could receive. I would also like to thank my two detectives, the real Marcia and Emma, who are always there to take care of my work and let me know when someone tries to copy my stories. And also to the future detectives, who I am sure will take care of my crazy little adventures. Thank you with all my heart. For those who do not know me yet, my name is Carmen Losada and I am the creator of Romances from Another Century. And thank you also to everyone who is part of this small community. Although I often do not have enough time to respond to all the comments, I want you to know that I already consider you my friends. There is a very beautiful song by a Brazilian singer that talks precisely about friendship, and it always makes me think about this little corner that we have all built together. Will I ever reach a million friends, Anz? Who knows? All I know is that as long as you continue to accompany me, I will continue writing stories with the same love as always. I wish you a beautiful day. I send you a big hug and take good care of yourselves. Carmen. The tale of color blindness that appears in this story is inspired by a true event, Bangent. This condition was scientifically described in 1794 by the English chemist John Dalton, who also suffered from it, Nitintat. For many years it was believed to be rare, but today we know that it mainly affects men and that the most common form consists of difficulty distinguishing certain shades of red and green. That's why Samuel was convinced that he was stealing the correct balls of yarn, when, in reality, he was taking them of the wrong color.